Session number 12246, Lieutenant Colonel W. Waitman, Reel 25.
Colonel W.A. Waitman, Reel 25.
Our adjutant at this time in 17th Para Battalion 9DLI was none other than Captain Jack Birkmar, who'd been our IO in 2DLI throughout the Burma campaign. John had gone out with the battalion and was in the Arakan campaign, Kohima, then Mandalay, Rangoon. We had met up again at Aldershot when he went through pre-parachute company, and he then went on to the 7th Parachute Battalion, which is a light infantry battalion, Ogbourne St. George, and it sadly was one that got the chop in 1948. John stayed on in the regular army. We met again when the 1st Battalion DLI were at Barnet Castle in 1956, and then we met again when they were out in Cyprus during the Eoka emergency, and John and I were both on intelligence duties in Cyprus. So he met up both professionally and socially. He left the army in 59 and through his wife's family got membership of Lloyds and has no doubt become a very wealthy member of Lloyds and resides in the Surrey stockbroker belt. Unfortunately, I haven't seen him since, although I did ring him in 1970 to see if he'd come and have a jar with me at the RAF club, but sadly he must have had other commitments. I hope that we meet in the not too distant future at some DLI reunion or other function. One amusing incident comes to mind, and it's actually on a photograph snapshot in my album, that someone in either my own B company or the battalion was carrying a camera and sent me a set of photographs, and one shows quite clearly Sergeant Ritchie with two magnificent black eyes, and he'd got these in a scrap with my redoubtable Corporal Mark Owens, as I said earlier, from the very formidable Stockton fighting family. Even their mother used to get involved in brawls on occasions, and his father had fought at the Battle of Jutland. But they're a great, hard-working, typical Teesside family, and Corporal Owens and Sergeant Ritchie had fallen out over what was reputed to be the most ugly woman in Scotland. And as Owens was quite good with his fists, Ritchie came off second best and sported a couple of beautiful shiners. Another chap who was on the exercise with us, Corporal Albert Jackson from Wall's End, he was in the machine gun platoon of support company. Albert, I lost touch with when I left 17 Para, but met him again when he, like I, joined the RAF regiment. And I met him in 1966 on the light anti-aircraft range when we were doing our annual low-level air defence practice at Akrotiri, and he had just booked into the wing headquarters. He appeared beside the rope to speak to me and said he thought he knew me. I asked, did you once own a greyhound that ran at Bolden Dog Track? He said, aye, sir. I said, well, we met again after 17 para days. I'm pleased to say that in May of this year, when we went to the Northern Region reunion and parade of the Parachute Regiment Association at Durham Cathedral, and later on the luncheon at the Ramside Hall Hotel, Durham, the first chap I met in Durham Marketplace, in civvies but complete with his maroon beret, was Albert Jackson. And I said, Albert, I'm pleased to see that you're still in the land of the living, and by your condition you're on a good pasture and looking well on it. I returned back to home in the East Riding, and having commuted infrequently to Norton because of the distance, realised that I should seek a transfer from 17 para 9 DLI. And a friend in the agricultural world had been for a couple of years trying to persuade me to apply to join the East Riding Yeomanry. And gladly, this friend, Peter Redfern, put my name forward to Colonel Tony Phillips as a potential East Riding Yeomanry officer. They were a rather choosy regiment, mainly from the business world of Hull, or people with a fair few acres, as opposed to myself, more of a peasant farmer, although there was another peasant farmer already in the unit called Bill Myers. However, Colonel Phillips accepted me, and I had three very, very interesting years in this armoured regiment. Again, a sign of the times, the early 50s, early to middle 50s, cutbacks in the forces and defence spending. When I joined, we had M10 tanks. By the following year, the M10s had gone. It was said that Gillette Razors had bought the lot and converted to Comets. We didn't actually use Comets in the field, but had them for training. The following year, we lost the Comets and became an armoured reconnaissance regiment. Originally, when I joined with the M10s, we were the Divisional Regiment Royal Armoured Corps for the 49th West Riding Division. That is to say, the M10 tanks, which was a Sherman chassis, but with an open turret, no lid on the turret, but with a 75mm gun capable of knocking out Soviet armour. And the division commander's responsibility was to identify any possible point of breakthrough by enemy armour, and the Div Regiment RAC was tasked to close that gap, plug it, and knock out all the enemy armour. It was a very good social unit, and that year, 1953, that I transferred to them, it was their 50th anniversary. So we had a 50th anniversary parade at Beverley Minster, and then a gathering on the Beverley Racecourse. And they had several chaps, including Major Lee Smith, mounted in their Boer War and First World War kit, with the ammunition pouches, the slouch hat, and the putties and breeches. A very picturesque it looked too.
Was it rather depressing to see these cutbacks? Because by now you're building up quite an experience of various army tasks, aren't you?
It was very, very disappointing indeed, and almost demoralising, in fact, to change our primary vehicle from M10 to Comet, then from Comet to the old Humber and Daimler armoured cars in the space of 3 years. But the coup de grace came in 1956, when the three Yorkshire cavalry regiments were all disbanded. The Yorkshire Dragoons from Doncaster and Wakefield, the Yorkshire Czars from York itself, and I think with the recce troop at Hemsley, and the East Riding Yeomanry from Hull, all three were disbanded. So I had seen this coming. We knew we were going to disband by the middle of 1956, and I'd already got an application in to join the Royal Air Force as a regular officer, or permanent officer, as they were called in the Royal Air Force, into the RAF regiment. And I'd received a very strong recommendation from Colonel Tony Phillips, had my ground officer selection board at RAF Uxbridge, and in the June of 1956, a letter of appointment came from the Air Ministry, as it then was, appointing me for a 5-year short service commission in the Royal Air Force Regiment as a flying officer. And whilst the Yeomanry, Hussars and Dragoons were disbanding and reforming as one reduced TA unit to be called the Queen's Own Yorkshire Yeomanry, and it itself was to go later on, I reported at RAF Catterick round about the 5th of July 1956 for Junior Regiment Officers Course number 10 of Junior Officer Training, and got stuck into that.
This would be about the time of the Suez Canal problem, was it?
Absolutely right. The war clouds were forming up in the Middle East. The war clouds were gathering. The skies were darkening. And I could foresee trouble ahead. Jamal Abdel Nasser at that time was beginning to throw his weight around. And in the middle of 56 or thereabouts, nationalised the Suez Canal. And actually, while we were on our junior officer course in the July, August, September, from the windows of the classroom, we could see transport going down the road as, obviously, preparations were being made for some move in the Middle East against Nasser. The course consisted of what the Army French would term a field phase. That was an infantry phase, followed by lasting a month, followed by 2 weeks nuclear, biological and chemical training, and then followed by 6 weeks at the aircraft training on the old L-60 hand-operated Bofors light anti-aircraft gun. The commandant at IFCAT at the time was the late Air Commodore Arthur Ryle, who was originally from the East Yorkshire Regiment and at one stage commander of the Iraq levies. With his army connection and his sporting connection, we had a useful liaison from the word go. The chief instructor was Wing Commander Maitland France, who sadly passed away 2 months ago. A very gentlemanly and efficient former Indian Army Lieutenant Colonel from the 13th Frontier Force Rifles. Our course commander was Major Hugh Milton, who had been in the 10th Gurkha Rifles, and he'd actually been in the 4th 10th Gurkhas, who shot us up in the Wangyu Gorge in the end of December 1944. This came out of the course of general conversation. Our course commander was the late Flight Lieutenant Peter Shaw, who had been in the Black Watch and again was a great character. Although post-war Black Watch, Peter was one of the chaps that one never forgets. And the fellow students, one was a Thai squadron leader, Squadron Leader Bantau Punsri, who later reached the rank of Air Marshal, and I was able, by prior arrangement, to meet up with him in Bangkok 4 years ago, after a gap of 27 years. One other student is being dined out at RAF Catrick in 3 weeks' time, Air Commodore Mickey Witherow, who had a very distinguished career and became Director of Ground Defence and Fire Services at MOD at the moment and is retiring in November. And we've maintained lifelong friendship and connection. Sadly, another student on the course, Pilot Officer Jerry Lane, who was with us on the same wing, number 19 wing, later that year in the November of 1956 in Jordan, and then alongside us in Cyprus, he transferred to the General Duties Flying Branch in 1959 as a navigator and was sadly one of the 10 crew killed in that Shackleton that crashed earlier this year when they ran into a hillside off the Scottish coast.
What attracted you to the RAF regiment?
I thought that my experience would be useful to them, and I knew that they also had a good name. But one particular point was the turning point. Our training major, Tim Allen, rang a friend at the War Office, as it then was, and said that I was interested in rejoining as a regular. And his colleague at the other end said he can apply, but I don't think he'll get infantry or armour at the age of 30. And he may well have to go for a corps such as the Royal Army Service Corps or the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. And I said, well, I won't give them the chance to do that. I'll stick to the RAF regiment, because I knew that they had some, albeit responsible for the close defence of RAF installations against air and ground attack, they were more active and more akin to what I'd been used to. With all due respect to the Royal Army Service Corps and Ordnance Corps, my cousin Harry Malham was killed with the 2 constituted the supply column in France in the British Expeditionary Force in the German thrust in May 1940. So I had no qualms on that score. And in fact, I've always had a very good liaison with the Royal Corps of Transporters, is now here in Catterick, two of my Army Cadet detachments, being Dale and Thirsk, being badged Royal Corps of Transport.
You mentioned in your training a spell of biological warfare training.
Yes, nuclear, biological and chemical, NBC it's called.
What form did that take?
One learnt the war gases and how to take protective action with the clothing and service respirator and gloves, of course. And one was put through the gas chamber with tear gas as opposed to killer gases such as phosgene or mustard gas at Catterick, and you came out shedding buckets of tears. So you got both a theoretical and practical. At that time, it was a legacy of the war years training, which we in fact had done before during the war years.
It wasn't the growing threat of the kind of biological warfare that speak of today.
It was certainly put over in theory, and of course the experimental station at Porton Down in Wiltshire had already been long in existence, so one was also told theoretically about the German nerve gases such as Tabun. Our course J10 finished up actually firing the Bofors at the